Hello to all my Australian babysitters. This beautiful anonymous. No names. No. Oh, sorry. One phone call. 1 hour. No names. And no bard.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun. And I'll get to know you. And you'll get to know me.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Harry Nelson, the new and improved host of Beautiful Anonymous. Happy to be here. Happy for you to be here with me. It's a new show, but it's the same old show you like. It's just with one missing one part and adding in another part, and I'm the second part. Welcome to the show. Got a chance to talk to someone today on the phone line that we open every week here on Beautiful Anonymous, and we will going forward. Nothing that won't change. But I talked to a nice woman from Australia. She taught me a lot of things and put up with me when I asked questions about the Crocodile Hunter and other things, and referencing Simpsons episodes that I saw in the past. So, without further ado, let's get into the phone call.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello?
Hello? Is that Harry?
Yeah, hello, it's me, it's Harry.
Hi, I'm so excited to talk to you.
That's great. How are you? What's going on?
It's actually just gone 7 in the morning here, so I woke up and saw you posting in the Facebook group, and I've been supporting your takeover for quietly behind the scenes for a while. So
that's
pretty stoked to see that you're actually doing it.
Thank you. I appreciate your support. For people who are unfamiliar, fortunately, due to some behind the scenes stuff, everything's fine. But Chris is on a bit of a probation here at Earwolf, and I'll be hosting the show Beautiful Anonymous, although we might change the title until further notice. I'm really excited to be doing this, and excited to be talking with you. I asked you how you are, and you've responded to that. What else would you like to talk about today?
Let's talk about... maybe you should ask me some questions.
Great,
to,
I love it.
You see know, that- how Chris, you know, because you're going to be... taken over.
Yes. Chris and I are friends. We don't need to talk about Chris, you know. we should. This is a new era. This is something we're moving into a new space. I think maybe we let me tell you a little bit about me, I guess, to get started. Is that good?
Yeah, that's helpful, because then, you know, maybe I can be Harry's Aussie best friend.
See, this is what I was going to ask. I noticed an accent, and we'll get into that. But first, let me tell you about my backstory. I'm from Indiana, you know, the Midwest. I'm in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I like television shows and video games.
Television shows and video games. You sound like every single one of my students.
See, I'm learning a little bit about you, and I'm loving it. I think I'm not going to ask you for constant validation, but I think I'm doing a great job.
I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you so much.
You feel confident in that.
I feel great about it. Everything's good, and this is normal and good. So you're from, you don't have to tell me, but can I guess where you're from?
Sure.
Are you from another continent?
I am, yep.
That's pretty good. Australia. And you're a teacher?
Yes, I am.
What grade do you teach?
Not grade, actually. I teach at two universities.
Wow. What's your subject of study or teaching?
So my area is writing and publishing.
Cool.
Books. Yeah.
Have you yourself published a book?
Oh, I haven't. I'm trying very, very hard.
I don't
but,
mean
um, as yet unpublished. I did get really, really close last year. I got shortlisted for a prize. I've got a lot of stuff in the pipeline, but nothing coming yet. So I've got some short stories and things, which is good because I also need validation, especially when you're standing up in front of classes full of college students who also want to be writers.
Totally.
Yeah, it's very, yeah. So I've got some stuff. I'm getting there, but you know, you do have that. I have that constant need for validation in that area too.
I think this call is going to be great for us. I think after this, we're both going to achieve our dreams and really have the confidence going forward that we have always known that was deep inside of us.
That would be really awesome if you could do that.
Yeah, no promises, but I feel
I
like
can
it's
do that for you.
I think it's going in that direction.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, great. So, what are some things we can speak about? I guess what's it like to be a what's it like to be a person who inspires the youth of America, not of Australia?
Yeah, Australia. I think I've had like three American exchange students in my class before.
Do you notice a difference in the way that they are? They like less respectful? Like, for example, I just interrupted you, which is something Americans do sometimes.
No, I don't really notice much of a difference at all. I think the way our classes run are a little bit differently. You know, most of our students don't come and live on campus. Most people commute. There's, you know, some student accommodation, but it's not run by the university. So it's all a little bit different. So I think that sort of stuff might be different for them.
Are American books and entertainment, are they so invasive in Australian culture that that's something, or is there like a whole world of media that you're focusing on that we might not be studying here in the States?
They are super, like, I've lived in the States a couple of times, and every time I came over, I realized that I just switched. I started saying sidewalk instead of footpath, and trunk instead of boot, and just all those little things. I just did them as soon as I started hearing the accent. I started speaking back that way. It's because we are raised on a steady diet of American culture over here. And I was probably a little bit more obsessed than the average child. I used to have 4th of July parties and things like that when I was a kid. But but I do think we're probably getting better now. Our film and TV industry is getting better, but it's also getting worse in some ways because streaming means that thing more. Which is really, actually, it's probably the best part. I also love TV, and I think that's probably the best part about this streaming thing is that we don't have to wait anymore or find our TV and stuff by other nefarious ways.
Sure. Yeah, I feel the same way. I watch a lot of British television, and used to be like 2 years later it would maybe show up somewhere, but now it's all over the place, and that's great.
Yeah, it's good. It's much better. But we are, we definitely make an effort to teach Australian literature to students because that's obviously the industry that they'll be going into. And it's also really important to me. So I'm a First Nations Australian person, so I'm an Aboriginal Australian. So it's also super important that we are not teaching colonial history all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's cool. That's something that I would like to talk about. But first, I want to jump back to something you said earlier that really fascinated me. Like, what's an Australian version of a 4th of July party? Like, is it like a really inflated? Like, I'm just curious, what was that like for you as a child?
Well, I grew up in Tasmania. I'm not there now, so I'm happy to say that I grew up down in Tasmania, which is the little state, the island at the bottom. And it was the dead of winter there. Dead of winter there is very, very cold. No snow, but very cold. So 4th of July, dead of winter, cold. So it wasn't really barbecues and potato salad and things like that.
Sure.
But my mum would always make us hot dogs and pizzas and let me watch whatever movies that we wanted to watch. And sometimes I'd come home from school and she would have stuck up, you know, red, white and blue streamers and things for me. And I occasionally made my family sing the national anthem because that was the sort of person that I was.
That's very funny. That's very cute, though. Like, I love hot dogs. Like, the idea of eating hot dogs and pizza as, like, oh, I'll pretend to be an American today. And is that, was that, that was just a result of, like, American culture being, like, such a...
I grew up reading, I was obsessed with the Babysitter's Club, and so I thought that that was what American life was like as a kid. So that's what I used to want to do everything. Like, I was really confused when I was, I read up because I'm now a writer and really into it.
Sure.
When I was about 8 or 9, I was reading them, and, you know, the girls in the Babysitter's Club, I don't know if you know much about them being a young American male, but the girls were always, 13, but they had two girls that were 11 that were allowed to babysit, and I thought that 11 was going to be the magic age that my mum would let me start my own babysitting business. It didn't ever happen, obviously, and then I thought, okay, maybe it's 13,
yeah.
And it didn't happen at 13 either, but that was how invested I was in thinking that those books were like real life.
I haven't read those books. I think I saw the movie that was released a long, long time ago. But did they make you actually want to be a babysitter? Like, I want to take care of children.
Oh yeah, I had little cousins, and that was it was what I wanted to. I just was like, yes, I'm.
Oh, sorry, you cut out.
Their age do. Yeah, I did that. But I also did things like I don't remember if it made it into the movie, but there was one of the girls who used to hide like candy in her bedroom because her family didn't like her eating it. So I would do things like that. I would hide my lollies in the bedroom and... You know, I just, and I would dress up like them every week. And in Australia, every year they have book week at school, and the primary school kids will dress up like their favorite book characters. And I would always go as a girl from a Babysitter's Club, which was like just going as a 12-year-old girl. Yeah.
Did you hid your lollies? Did your parents not want you to, or were you just like, I'm going to hide these because I think that that's the cool thing to do?
I was going to hide them because it was a cool thing to do.
They would give them to you and then you would go hide them in your room.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There was no restriction of food in my house at all.
It was just self-imposed because of it. Well, I guess they...
Yeah, that's right.
I did the same thing. Not with Babysitter's Club. I was really into the book Harry the Spy when I was a kid. Are you familiar with that?
That's cool. Yeah.
I really wanted to be like a spy when I was, you know, 10 years old. It turns out there wasn't a lot to spy on in suburban Indiana. So you are Australian. We're just going to keep coming back to the basics as I work up the ability to have a conversation with a person. You're an Australian.
You're doing really well.
Hey, you're doing great too.
It's a fun conversation.
We're having a good
time.
You're
letting me talk about the Babysitter's Club. It's awesome.
Please do talk about. Did that lead at all to your desire to teach like literature and writing and stuff?
I mean, it started my It wasn't really the first books that I loved, but they were. It was just always books and stories that I loved. My nanny used to make up stories about me and my dog, and she used to rewrite the actual picture books that she was reading to me. There was a book, it's not a very famous one, and it was called Grandmother, and then it had a name, and the name was actually her name, which I won't say. And I actually thought that that book someone had written about us, and she would, the little girl in the book had like sort of similar hair that I had, and so my nan, she had no name, the little girl in the book, and my nan would say the grandmother and my name and insert my name into the story. So I am sometimes really confused about whether that happened in the book or whether that was something that she made up. And I found the book recently and had a look, and I went, oh, that picnic was in the book. That wasn't a real thing that happened.
But it sort of became a part of your internal narrative. You keep, no, you're
like that. Yeah.
Your phone keeps cutting out for periods of time. I'm not sure. Like,
oh, okay.
So I'm not sure what's causing that. I just want to make you aware of it.
I'll try and stand in one place.
I would never ask you to do that. I just want you to know that how my experience on this side. And if I cut out, feel free to tell me. It's like I want us to have that kind of relationship.
All right.
Australia stuff. You know,
okay.
You know, here's the thing. Australia. Speaking of Australia, and I know that I don't want to bring up Chris Gethard too awful much, but platypuses. Duck-billed platypuses. They get a bad rap on the show.
Yeah.
I personally think they're cute. Chris has a pretty closed mind on the subject. Do you have any anything you'd like to speak on about that?
I think they're really cute too. I guess they're a bit scary with the poison in their feet, but yeah, they're really cute. They're
poison in their feet?
You don't. Yeah, they have like these poisonous things in them. Oh, I'm going to get ripped for this. Many other Aussies have heard it, but yeah, they have like the males, I think it is, have like spikes, and I'm pretty sure they have poison in them. I don't know.
Oh,
somebody can definitely tell me on the Facebook group that I'm wrong, but they definitely have spikes.
Jeez. Well, I always thought they were so cute. If I saw one, I would be like, I want to pet this weird-looking creature. Now I know to fear them.
Well, the thing is, you don't see them very often. Like, I have seen them in the wild, but you really, really don't see them very often. The last place I saw them was actually shortly after Chris Gethard said something about them the last time, and I had a friend from Germany here, and I'd taken her to see some native animals. And I was taking a million photos of them to put in the Facebook group, but I never ended up getting to do that because you couldn't really take very good photos with a phone in this. They have like portals so that you can see them underwater.
What do you mean?
I just could not get a good.
They're portals?
They have, you know how if you go into a zoo and you're like, seeing snakes and you go into a dark little house and they've got round portal windows or something to see them because they're nocturnal and whatever. So in the platypus house at this sort of zoo that I took my friend to, you go inside a dark room and they have like little portals so that you can see them underwater. So
gotcha.
You're under the water
yeah.
and you can see them swimming around. And they're really cute. They are really cute.
Yeah, they're very cute. They're
you're
now
in
I'm
the water with them. Then
terrified of them. When you said portals, I thought you meant like in the wild, and I was like, I didn't know what that meant. Maybe I thought it was
just in the zoo, not in the wild.
Yeah.
No. We commercialize our animals, but not to that degree.
Australia. Like I said, we're going to keep going back to that as our base. That's our base topic, and then we're expanding from there. And that's the way I host the show. I am now the host of
Well, as long as you don't do the run through 18 Crocodile Dundee quotes, then then that's awesome. I'm happy about the Australia thing.
Well, now I want to talk about Crocodile Dundee.
Well, when the first day that I got off the plane in the US and my the very first time I came over there, I had my friend and a group of her friends came over to meet me, and I spent the whole time like having them go, "That's not a knife. This is a knife."
See? I mean, that's a fun thing, but I appreciate that it would probably be annoying if people kept saying that to you unprompted. Is there like an American equivalent of Crocodile Dundee? Like, what's like the movie that you would point to and be like, "Oh, that's like the American stereotype"? What were you playing at your Fourth of July parties?
I don't think there was really, because we just had so much. It was probably just what you all had. It was probably, you know, so we didn't really have that's a big stereotypical American movie.
Yeah. I think, since we're talking Australian stereotypes, I think that, you know, Steve Irwin really did a good job for American-Australian relations. He just seemed like a real sweetheart. The crocodile.
Yeah, I think he was a good guy. I was living in California when he passed away, and lots of people while I was there would ring me and ask me if I was okay. It was really sweet.
That is very sweet.
I think people thought I actually knew him, but
Do you think it did affect you in a large, like, did you have any particularly strong feelings for it? Like, was he? I imagine he was a bigger celebrity there, even maybe. Is Steve Irwin a big celebrity in Australia? That's the kind of incisive question asking that you're going to get on this new version of Beautiful Anonymous. You're also going to get some advertisements, because that's the way we keep the lights on over here. So please listen to these sponsors and buy the things that they offer. Do you like wearing shirts with stuff from podcasts on them? If so, I have the perfect website for you. It's podswag.com. And the best news is we have tons of Beautiful Anonymous merchandise. Do you like shirts? Do you like pens, mugs, even a signed poster from the previous host or a signed copy of his book, which I haven't read, but I heard is pretty good? It's all there on Podswag, and it's all waiting for you. So to get all that stuff and more, head to podswag.com/beautiful for the entire Beautiful Anonymous collection and, you know, wear it, buy it for someone you care about. Thanks so much, sponsors, for all you do and all you make. Now let's get back into the phone call. Like, was he? I imagine he was a bigger celebrity there, even maybe.
He's a massive celebrity. He still is. His whole family's still big here.
Yeah.
They're all still on billboards and doing things for wildlife. I don't know. My feelings are complicated. I think that they wanted the best for the country and for the wildlife. But then, of course, he's a white fella, and
sure,
some of those things are a bit complex for me to think about too.
Sure.
You know, the need to have conservation for animals here in Australia maybe is a complex issue. So yeah, some of those things. But yeah, I think he was a good guy. He raised money. I think I went to his zoos once, like 15 years ago, and it felt like most of the money was going back to conservation projects. He certainly fought really hard to keep developers from getting in the area around where they had their zoo. They own acres and acres of land. To the best of my knowledge, they own a lot of land up there, and they, you know, have bought that land with the specific intent to keep it as is. So,
yeah,
you know, obviously anyone would think that that was a good thing, except for the developers, maybe.
Sure. Yeah, they definitely seem like their hearts are in the right place as far as that goes.
But you
touched on it a bit, but what's it like to be like an Aboriginal person? Is that the correct term, Aboriginal?
Yeah, we say an Aboriginal person, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, when you're speaking about all First Nations people, mm-hmm, in Australia, because we're different people, and there were hundreds of nations here in Australia, so we're not all from one mob. We say mob. Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's a terribly racist country in many, many ways. I want to also say, though, that I have I have immense privilege because I'm a very fair-skinned Aboriginal person, and I don't know how your Australian history is, but
Let me say now that I don't know. It is almost none. That's why I wanted to talk about Steve Irwin for so long. We've run out of references. Well, there's a Simpsons episode where they go to Australia. I know that very well. But please.
There's
my community
in that. Yeah.
Please. Yeah. So I would love to hear all about it.
Well, I can't speak for all First Nations people here. So I'll do my best from my own experience. So I have privilege because my skin is very fair. That's as a result of we had a policy here in Australia called the White Australia Policy, and the colonisers aimed to breed the black out of us. Said that it would take three generations for that to happen. So yeah, in many ways, I have an uncomfortable privilege that comes with that, but it's really important. To many fair-skinned mob, but to all mob, that we sort of reclaim that. So in Australia, you might meet someone like me who's quite fair-skinned, who says that they're a black fella or they're a black woman or whatnot, and that is something completely different to say in the States. I would never come to Australia and purport to understand the struggles of people in the US. It's completely different, and it's complex in that respect, I suppose. My family comes from two different mobs, and my great grandfather, he was born on a station, and he was moved in the 1920s, I think it was. They marched a lot of their men away from their home country, and they did that because, you know, it gets a bit scary when the young men start to learn law and come into their, it just gets a bit scary for the white fella when the young black fellas are coming up that way. So they marched a lot of them and moved them around. So he was moved to a different area, which is hundreds and hundreds of kilometres away. And he met my great nana there, and she had also been removed from her family, and they got married on the mission there. And when they went off to get married, they were given a thing called an exemption, where they were exempt from a lot of the protections, the supposed protections that Aboriginal people had put on them by the government. They were allowed to go and live their lives, but they were told to live as though they were white. And so they moved to another small town, and they were told to raise their children as though they were white. And if they were questioned on why they had darker skin, they were to say that they were from Lebanon, because it was more acceptable. So my nana, not the one that used to read to me, a different nana, she is in her 80s now, and she's not, she's mostly fine, but she's got those first touches of dementia. And so my cousin and I both work in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander space as well. And she would say to me, "I don't know what you two are on about. We're not Aboriginal." And I would say, "Well, that's wrong, Nana. I've got all the paperwork that tells these stories. I'm not just telling the story for telling a story's sake." And she goes, No, "we're Lebanese. We've got Lebanese ancestors. Wow. That's why I look like this. That's why your mum looks like this." And yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah.
Makes me feel really sad. But I do definitely think it's the sort of story that maybe you all don't hear very much over in the States.
No.
So
like as a writer and someone who's like producing art as an Aboriginal person, is that something that you like, how do you think that affects you? How do you try and let that work its way into your art? I don't know if that was that question made sense. You know what I mean? How are you?
Yeah, I know. Okay. I know what you mean. Yeah, that's exactly what I do with my writing. So that's the space. That's very much the space that I work in now with my writing. And it's because there's a writer in the community, a really well established Aboriginal writer who I really respect and admire, and she talks about how our words and our stories have power. So unfortunately, because I am part of the stolen generation, well, I know who my mobs are, and my mobs, my mob has claimed me. They say, yes, you're one of us, and that's really great. But it also means that I don't have a position or standing in my community. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't have a position or standing in my community. It's a bit different now, but I didn't for much of my life. And it means that many of those traditions and customs aren't passed down to me, so I don't have knowledge. But this writer says that all of our stories have power, whether you went through horrible, awful, traumatic things and your family did, and you still have country, or whether you were dispersed and you don't know who your people are.
Yeah.
Your stories have power. And she talks about how we should use our power to maybe reclaim the harmful stories that are told about us, which are, you know, very much along the lines of stereotypical caricature type things, and we get to change the narrative by doing that. So I take that kind of I take that responsibility really seriously, I suppose.
Do you feel comfortable like identifying like as an Australian? Like is that, what's the
it's really tough. Yes and no. I'm not very proud of my country at the moment. I haven't woken up feeling very proud of my country at the moment. I don't know if you've heard news coming out of in Christchurch, which is New Zealand, not my country, but they're our closest relatives. But I'm not very proud of that. And there's some tiny things. Well, not tiny. They're massive. If you're Australian, they're massive things coming out about that, but I don't want to give those people airtime. So in that respect, no, I'm not very proud of it. But I think that things can be better. I have a lot of hope for it. So I still kind of say so-called Australia to many people, but to y'all in the States, I would say I'm Australian. It's just easier.
Sure.
I can have that conversation about like where I actually come from with some people, but for most people, if I come to the US, I just drop in as a white Australian. So I mean that creates its own complications as well, but yeah, it's not my space to claim when I'm traveling in that respect. I'll talk about my experiences, but I definitely am not doing, I spoke to some students this week and I like to make them uncomfortable with those notions of what black and white is in Australia.
Yeah.
And so I kept saying, I was here, white fella, I'm a black fella, kept saying things to because that discomfort kind of breeds interest, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of students then wanting to talk to me about some of those preconceived notions. So I do that a lot now, but I would certainly not, if I was coming to, say, teach in the US, be standing up doing things like that there. I would speak to my experience and I would explain, but it's not the sort of space I would claim there.
Yeah. Wow.
See, look, you got deep and heavy and got the big story out of me. Yeah. You did really well.
I mean, sure. I mean, it helps to, like, you're really, like, the way you speak really eloquently about this sort of stuff, which is something I admire, because I feel like if I, even something that's important to me or something that I care a lot about, I often have a hard time expressing it, I find. And I really admire the way that you're able to speak of that. You mentioned a term, the stolen generation, and part of my ignorance, but can you speak about that a little more? Oh, sorry. You mentioned a phrase called the stolen generation. You said that earlier. Can you expand on that a bit? And talk, just, I mean, I assume.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll do my best, and I guess that there'll be a conversation around that after this comes out. But the white settlers removed mostly children, I think, but they removed people from their home under this Protection Act. They said it was for their own protection, but it was so that they could take land and farm in different ways to the way the ancestors were farming and running their communities and running their day-to-day lives. So they started moving people away and splitting families up. There was a lot of, we're going to teach the savages to be Christians, good Christians. So they had missions. So lots of them were run by churches. So missionaries come out and get their noses stuck into the savages. And they wanted to educate us and teach us language, because apparently we didn't have language, which we did. And unfortunately, many languages are lost, but there's a real movement here. Actually, 2019 is the year of Indigenous languages, and there's a lot of reclamation going on. There are many, many mobs and states in Australia doing their best to put together the language again, and there are many people in communities that still have language and speak it, and so they're doing things like writing picture books for children so that they grow up being able to speak their language. They split families up. Men were sent mostly to work as labourers. Women were sent to work as domestic servants. And, they basically became slaves to the white settlers as they came over. So the kids were in the mission, and the adults were out working and being treated poorly in all the ways that I'm sure you understand, all the things that can happen with people when they're put into servitude, into rich white families. So yeah, there's a lot of really traumatic history.
I'm curious I feel like growing up in school and stuff, the teachers kind of yada yada over like the more negative parts of American history. Like, is this something that's becoming do they teach this in school? Like, coming up as a Australian youth, like, do kids like
they learn? Didn't when I was in school at all. We dressed up like convicts, and we were taught all about how horrible it was for people in England to be rounded up and sent out here on boats. And I could tell you intimately about the boat journeys made by specific people. Yeah. I was always really interested in that, because at the same time as I identify as First Nations person, obviously I have family that came out that way as well, on the other side of the family. So I was really into that as a kid, because, you know, they told us that we all had descendants from there, and I thought that was really interesting. But it was hard. I remember being in like grade one or two, and I just have this memory which keeps coming back to me now, and I think it's because I'm working so much in the space of Indigenous knowledges, is that I the teacher was trying to ask us where we came from. And like I already told you, I grew up in Tasmania, which is a little island separate to the rest of Australia. And I kept trying to tell the teacher that I was from Australia. And she was like, yes, Tasmania is Australia as well. We're just a state. And she kept trying to explain to me that. But I was trying to tell her that I was first. That was what I was trying to explain to her. And I didn't have the words to tell her that. I knew that was...
Sorry, you cut out there again.
I don't think we were taught it in school. So,
Sorry.
We were separated out sometimes.
You cut out.
Well, did I drop out?
Yeah,
about that.
Yeah, you cut out during the last 30 seconds or so of it.
Okay. So we weren't taught it at all in school.
Yeah.
But we were separated out. So I can't speak for my sister. I'm not 100% sure, but I think when I first started high school, I was having trouble with math, and I got a tutor, and I went to a tutoring group that was for the Aboriginal kids at the school, and there was some. This was in the early 90s, mid 90s, and there was some talk about how Aboriginal kids were coming to school not having breakfast, so they started a club for us to have breakfast in the morning in the home ec classrooms, which was great, but I would be having second breakfast because I did get breakfast at home. And I got to go on camp with other Aboriginal kids from other schools, but that was kind of it. Like, that was where they kind of expected in school that our knowledge about our history would come from our people, which, you know, continues to perpetuate that system. I know that there are moves to change it now, but I'm really not sure. I've got someone in my family who is, I've got a few teachers in my family, and someone else who's about to become a teacher, and I know that he's got to write some assignments on teaching Indigenous knowledges, and is going to come to me and have me check it over for him. But I don't know how much that's actually happening in the classroom.
Yeah.
But yeah, those things are kind of glazed over. They were at least in my day, which makes me feel really old, but you know.
So you grew up in Tasmania.
Yes.
I bet the Tasmanian devil must really piss you off.
Not really. I think it's pretty accurate.
Accurate how? Well, that's it's a real animal.
Yeah, they're real animals.
And they spin around and eat stuff?
Well, look, they're tiny and cute. They look tiny and cute, but if you get them on your farm, you will have no sheep left. They are vicious. They have some, they're really, really vicious. They're cute and tiny and endangered, and we need to keep them, but they're also carnivores.
I'm noticing a trend of Australian animals looking
cute animals,
but having secret deadly attributes. Do you just run into it every once in a while and be like, oh, look, it's a Tasmanian devil. Let's move our sheep. Let's take a break there before we hear the answer to this Tasmanian devil-related question to hear from our sponsors. Now is the perfect time to jump into one of Earwolf's best shows. It's Fake the Nation, the political roundtable comedy show hosted by Nagin Farsad, which features fast-paced, funny, and smart political discussion about the week's news. If you don't listen to the show, you're messing up, dude. It's great. Nagin Farsad is funny and smart. I would never take over her show because she's too good at it. So please do me a personal favor and download Fake the Nation. I believe that the I believe that the former host of this very podcast will be on later this month. So keep an ear out, add it to your podcast list, and make it number one. That's Fake the Nation here on Earwolf. I think add it to your podcast list and make it number one is a great tagline. Thank you, sponsors. Now let's finish off this phone call. Do you like just run into every once in a while and be like, oh, look, it's a Tasmanian devil. Let's move our sheep.
No. Well, definitely not. I do remember we did have a farm when I was a kid, and I do remember them getting into goats once, but that's like a really vague memory. But no, and I live on the mainland now, so I definitely don't run into any Tasmanian animals up here. We run into possums a lot, which are not, funnily enough, they're the exact opposite of a cute animal that will attack you. They're not like your opossums. They're actually very cute possums here. They're annoying and they're noisy and they make messes and they get into your gardens, but they're very cute. I know. I saw a possum in the US and I wanted to run away screaming. So,
yeah, no, they're terrifying. When I was a kid, my grandfather caught one in our backyard because it like had broken its jaw or something. And so he like put it in a little cage so that it would be okay, I guess. And I was a little boy. I didn't know what one was. And it was like, why are you keeping a monster in our backyard? It's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, ours are not like that. You wouldn't run away screaming if you saw them in the street. And the most I ever get is that my dog runs outside and barks at them when they're in the back garden. That's about it.
What are some other terrifying Australian animals that we should preserve? Kangaroos recently, people are starting to talk about the fact that a kangaroo will really fuck you up. Sorry, Paula. Paula's my mother's name.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you say? Who do you say sorry to?
My mother, Paula. She's a lovely woman.
Okay, all right.
She cusses though too, so really.
Sorry, Paula.
Yeah, we're taking down all the Sorry Sally shirts on PodSwag. By the time this episode goes up, it should be all Harry Nelson themed merchandise.
Awesome, great. They can be really scary. But where my parents live now, they live about 5 hours away from me now, and they have acreage and. We get up in the morning and have coffee and sit on their back deck and watch the kangaroos. It's really cool.
That's cool.
It's, you know, the most Australian thing ever. most of the time, I would speak to someone from the US and go, no, they don't like hop down the street. I don't see them. I live in a suburb that's probably very similar to a suburb that you grew up in or that you live in if you live in in the sticks, and no, we don't see kangaroos all the time. And then I go, oh, but I could take you up to see my mom and dad, and then you really would see the kangaroos in their backyard. And I go, all right. So they do run around like that, but they're not the big ones that will
really
have a go at you. Yeah. I have sat there watching them fight each other. Which is intense, but they would run away if you went down near them.
Please describe a kangaroo fight to me. And I'm sorry that I'm talking to an Australian person and saying, please describe a kangaroo fight to me, but you can't, I gotta know, I gotta hear a little.
You've also got to play to your listening audience so that, you know, it's not the only takeover that you get. They do jump up and fight with their feet. So their little paws up the top.
Yeah.
I don't think they do much but put the food in their mouth, I think. I don't know if someone who knows more about animals can maybe come in, but they definitely jump up and, like, attack each other with their feet.
Oh,
so they jump up and smash each other with their feet and tails as well. They stand up on their tails.
Oh, what?
Like, those things are strong. Yeah, yeah, they stand back up on their tails and they use those to get the leverage.
Yeah, I would not expect. I would
You should probably YouTube kangaroo fights.
Do that soon as I get out of this call. Wow. So kangaroos. We've talked. Okay, so we've gone over Paul Hogan, the Crocodile Hunter, kangaroos, Tasmanian devils. We can go into koalas and wallabies if you want, or we can use the remaining 13 minutes to talk about something else. How are you feeling?
Well, wallabies don't have, there's not much to say about wallabies. They're really like miniature kangaroos. They're really, really cute. And my pop, and by pop I mean grandfather, not my dad, because people say pop for dad.
And I noticed you say you said Nana. Is that right? You referred to your Nana. And I grew up calling my grandmother my Nana. Isn't that interesting?
Do you?
Yeah.
It is interesting. It's funny because both of my grandmothers, one is no longer with us and one is, and they both of them were in their, I think one was in her late 40s and one was in her early.
Oh, sorry, you cut out again. You cut out again. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
When you cut out, do I cut out? Maybe we're both cutting out at the same time. I guess that's kind of another way.
You cut out after that, so I hear you say you cut out and that cuts out a bit.
International phone calls, you know? They haven't worked out all the kinks. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, they haven't. So my grandmothers both wanted to be called Nan or Nanny or Nana because they said they were too young to be grandma or granny or anything like that. And my mum is a grandmother now and she said the same thing. So I think it's quite funny. So my pop, who is my grandfather, he still lives in Tasmania and he fights a nightly battle with the wallabies that come into his garden and eat his flowers.
A battle with the wallabies.
They come into his garden and they eat his beautiful flowers. He's a really proud gardener and the wallabies come in and also they poo in his yard and if you ever stay with him, you get up in the morning and he goes, oh, the ruddy wallabies have been pooping in my garden. And it's very funny.
It's great. Your pop fights wallabies, sometimes kangaroos, box men. Yeah. That's a thing that happens, right?
Oh, I think that's a stereotype.
Probably from a bygone era. I don't think they'd, yeah.
Yeah.
Might not be a thing as much anymore if the Irwins have anything to say about it.
Yeah.
All right. Animals. Animals. What's your favorite animal?
Yeah. Oh, God.
That's something Chris often asks on the podcast.
But you know what? So here is maybe your deciding factor with the Facebook group. Where do you come down on the dog thing?
Oh, God. You know, I have to say that I have very similar feelings to Chris about dogs.
Oh no!
I know,
Harry. No,
I know. I just got a cat. I just got a little kitten. She's the cutest thing in the world. And I love cats. And it's not like I dislike dogs, but I've never had a dog. There's never been a dog in my life that has meant as much to me as people often express that theirs do.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I can understand that, but my dog's looking at me at the moment.
Oh,
like,
my God. Dogs are great.
Could you get off the phone and give me my breakfast, please, person? Oh, he's just sighed and looked away.
You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to go and feed your dog. I like dogs. Dogs are good. Cut out the part where I said I don't like dogs.
All right.
And I do. I like them. They're good stuff.
Bleep it.
yeah, bleep, bleep. Yeah, just, that'll just be like a 45-second long bleep that'll cover the, my stammering about how I feel about dogs, which I think they're fine. They're good.
I can understand it, but it's just me, and it's just me. I've just bought a house, so I live in a nice house, but I say that I bought the house for my dog, and it's just me and him. And, you know, I guess when it's nobody else, that kind of, I know people, big families have that special connection with their dog or whatnot, mm-hmm. but he's a rescuer, and he's like, yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way about
my. I just don't get.
Well, my little cat. She's the cutest thing in the world, and I got her from the ASPCA, and it's the bonding was so immediate, and I imagine that it would be a similar. It's just like it's us. We're hanging out. We got each other, and it's a really nice feeling. So I wouldn't regard it. Could be people like things, and that's beautiful. So what are your top five opinions on why I'm better at hosting the show than Chris?
Oh, goodness. You've put me on the spot, haven't you?
I would think that they'd be obvious by this point. We've got 8 minutes left.
Oh, look, I think it's...
Nailing it.
You're totally nailing it. You gently move the conversation away from me not really knowing what to talk about. You got the big issues out.
Mm-hmm. That's two.
We didn't really do too much small talk at the start, I guess.
We did a little. It was mostly about me.
I knew who you were. I didn't say, did I say, hey, is this Harry?
I think you did. That was cool.
Oh, God. Damn it. I just wanted to go hello and start talking. It was always my plan. I'm so disappointed with myself.
I mean, it's hard. You never. It's the phone connection. But I mean, it must be nice to not have to hear about New Jersey or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or any of the other Chris Gethard things.
Well, we have some hobbies in common. That. For sure, you and I. I mean, I've been to New Jersey.
Ugh, I've been to. I'm sorry.
Lots of parts.
No, I'm just kidding. It's
but yeah. I've been to some nice parts of New Jersey and some not so nice parts.
Yeah.
I lived in New York for a while. Most of my friends commuted in from New Jersey. I got told that I should never just say Jersey, and I did, and got the. Yeah,
but
that's the thing. But we're not talking about that.
No, we're
right?
talking about. If anything, we should be talking about Indiana, which is where I'm from. Here are some places that are in Indiana: Bloomington, Lebanon,
you know what?
Crawfordsville.
You can tell me what are good things because I have really shamefully only stuck to eastern and western states, and I need to rectify that. So. Please tell me some things I could do.
If you were going to the area, Indiana wouldn't be the first state I would recommend you go to. It's a lovely place with a lot of lovely people. Bloomington, if you're ever in Indiana, check out Bloomington. It's a great place. Great comedy club out there. Beautiful scenery. But comedy isn't what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about my interests, the game... that I've been playing recently called Mario Odyssey on Nintendo Switch. I think video games are more expensive out there, right? Isn't that a thing? Don't you have harsher restrictions on video games?
I think so. I think that's a thing. But I don't play video games. I have a first generation Wii still.
Nice.
But I... the reason I don't play video games is not because I'm snarling disdainfully at you and saying, no, I spend more time with books. It's because I'm pretty sure I've got a fairly addictive personality and I just do not have time to sit and play video games in the way that I would probably play them should I get interested in them.
Sure.
So I always, have trouble with that. But my students have to write a review this first assignment that's about to come up, and I always get video game reviews that make me go, maybe I should get that console and play that game, and then think, no, I have to finish grading these papers. So, yeah. You know, it never happens.
If you ever get a chance, you know, to play a video, if you need some tips, please feel free. I'll recommend some good games. Okay. We got 4 minutes left. Unlike the previous host of this podcast, I don't have any books. What are some tips to get a book published? Let's say I wanted to make a book.
Oh, you don't have an
about winning and why that's good. About why sometimes succeeding in life is actually the thing to aim for. How can I get that done?
Judd Apatow on my speed dial. Sad. But I think you've got a great voice to do an audio book.
Thank you so much. So I just gotta find something to read, you know?
Yeah. You've just gotta find something to read. But you know, you don't necessarily have to read your own book, so you may not have to write one.
That's true.
Yeah.
You just saved me a huge step.
Tell Audible, hey, someone's told me I'd make a really good reader.
Yeah, I mean I'd love to be the reader for your eventual audiobook. Maybe that's how we'll...
That would be awesome. All right. That's awesome. Yes. That would be really cool.
That's what we'll do.
It would be funny because, you know...
Because it would be...
It's probably fairly Australian.
Yep.
Would you try and do the accent or not?
I don't know. Do you think that it would be good for me to try to do the accent?
No, I don't know. How confident do you feel? Because, you know, it's a tough one.
You know, I'll give it, you know. As the new host of Beautiful Anonymous, I need to be able to do this sort of thing. I have actually a pretty good accent. Let me give it to you. Just tell me what you'd like me to say, and I'll say it in the accent.
Oh, maybe you should say one of those cliche ones.
Oh, like...
Do the Simpsons one. Do the Knifey Spoonie.
Oh, I've seen you played Knifey Spoony before. Is that good? How was that?
Not too bad.
See?
If you were aiming for the Simpsons version of the Australian accent.
I mean, all my impressions just come back to chimney sweep. No matter what I'm trying to do, it all just sounds like...
Yeah, governor.
Yeah, hey, governor. Put another... Yeah, there are a lot of Australian stereotype lines, but I won't say them because I now after this call, I feel like I have a more robust understanding of the place, of the continent.
Yes. We'll try and tell you that our animals will not kill you, but they probably will. You know, you touched on all the cute fairy ones, but there's snakes and spiders. The spiders are the things.
I've seen some of the spiders, and frankly, I'm not a fan of the stuff you got going on there, spider wise.
Yeah.
We've got a little more than a minute left. Thank you for talking to me.
That's all right. No, this was really fun, and I think it's high time you took over, Harry.
Thank you.
It's high time.
It's a bold new direction to put me on the front of this very large podcast, but. It's what the Earwolf people have decided. They have not seen that it has happened yet, but once they do, I'm sure they'll be very into the idea. And coup will be successful.
I've been silently hoping for it since I've seen this war begin, and I'm really glad to have been the person that got to speak to you.
Thank you.
And if Chris is listening, I do still really like you.
I don't appreciate that, but it's nice enough to say. I know he used that kind of thing in this dark time in his life when he's been removed.
Yeah,
look,
in
his
dark time in his life, just something nice about him.
He's not allowed on the premises, but he's still allowed to download the podcast like anyone else. Or subscribe to Stitcher Premium.
Yeah, he can download the podcast.
If he so chooses.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time. Thanks again for all your support.
Thank you.
Throughout this coup, and thanks for calling. I really did enjoy speaking with you today, and thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. It was super fun. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, caller, for taking the time to speak with me and for not hanging up when you found out we weren't going to be speaking with Chris. I had a good time hosting the show today, and I will have a good time hosting the show going forward, and I hope that you have a good time listening. Some people to thank, you know, thanks to Jared O'Connell in the booth. I was in the booth once, I know what it's like, but now I'm on the other side, and I have to say, it's better. Thanks to Justin Lindbill, who is my new assistant. Thanks to Shellcheck, doing the music. HarryNelson.com. Find out. I don't have any upcoming tour dates, as I mentioned, but please rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, an Apple Podcast or Stitcher. I guess also just write me and tell me what a good job I did and how much you don't miss Chris Gethard. And I'll speak with you next week on Beautiful Anonymous. Also, HarryNelson.com is not my website. Next time on Beautiful Anonymous, maybe my most difficult conversation yet. Hello?
Hi, Harry. It's Colin from Earwolf.
Oh, yeah.
How are you doing?
Hi, Colin. You're not really supposed to say your name or anything, but I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I was surprised to get through on the show phone number. Usually that's pretty busy, but I guess since people think you're the host now, no one's really calling.
Yeah, it's been pretty slow around here.
Listen, good job on the show last week.
Thank you.
I think you gave it a really good shot.
Like the tense here.
It seems like we've had quite a lot of pushback from listeners. Oh. People seem kind of upset not having Chris on the show.
Okay.
Kind of angry at you.
Oh, really?
Like I say, well done, good try, but I think we're going to have to bring Chris back.
Fine. Thanks for saying good try, at least. That part was nice.
Yeah, okay. So we'll get Chris back in next week.
Okay. I'm not allowed to hang up.
All right, then.
But you can.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to hang up. That seems rude, so I guess I'm just going to get on with some work.
Okay, sounds good.
Good talking to you.
That's next time on Beautiful Anonymous.